item is 105 Hewlett Street, Bronte. And the first speaker I have is Christine Chahi. Could you come forward, please, madam?
Where should I sit?
No, just in the middle there. I think our microphone is the best one to use.
That's correct.
Yes, please go ahead.
And it's loud enough, the way I speak?
Yes. Yes,
good.
Fine.
So thank you first, Asma, for the start. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to address the panel. Our main concern of this current proposal is the addition of the fixed glazing to the already non-compliant top-level balcony to the west facing our home. This high fixture will further obstruct our outlook to the east. A similar privacy paneling was requested by the former owners of 107 Hewlett Street, the neighboring property to the east of this proposal during its construction, and was denied by council due to the objection of the former occupants of 105 Hewlett Street for the same reason of view obstruction. We had a meeting with Tom, the applicant, in August, during which he reassured us that their new plan would have no increase in height from the previous submission, nor any external changes that would further impact our amenities, as was previously approved. The changes were to be internal due to economic purposes. We have had to make adjustments to our house plans to comply with council's requests and in response to our neighbors' concerns, such as having deleted the projection of our top-level rear balcony after having had council's approval to appease our neighbor. Also, I may mention that council declined our request to have a window installed in our 2.6 meter wide storeroom at the rear of our garage, as this would have our home classified as a three-story house, which was not allowable at the time in the late 80s. Here I wish to point out that our house has been incorrectly described as three-story dwelling by the developer. Several times we had requested a copy of a dilapidation report from the builder developer after the previous plans were approved with no response. It is a major concern to us should any excavation works be carried out, especially along our eastern wall. A particular concern is of any possible disturbance to the footing of our southeast corner column. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the members of the panel? Thank you very much. Mr. Tom Williams is the next speaker. Come forward, please, and have a seat. And your name is Tom Williams. You're the architect for the applicant.
Architect and owner.
And owner.
Yes.
Right.
Just sort of a preface, we had an existing DA approval on this property, and unfortunately we missed a deferment of consent to provide cross-sections through our driveway. And so the whole reason why we are resubmitting this is because we missed the opportunity to submit those cross-sections in the 12 months allowed. The assumption was that we had 5 years in the previous DA. So other than that, there's going to be minor changes internally within the existing DA confinement. But other than that, it's working within the same premise of the previously approved DA.
So there's no changes from the previous plan that was approved?
It's internal layout changes only, but in terms of scale of the building, volume of the building, projection of the building, and all the items addressed in terms of view
loss.
Do
you wish to respond at all to anything that Ms. Shahi had to say?
The view loss was something brought up in the last EA process.
Yeah.
It's something that we engaged a view loss consultant for, and it was deemed at the time that we were not, if the impact was peripheral, it was nothing to do with a view from the front of the building, or the direct view.
Can I just ask, Chair? So there's no further glazing on the upper levels or obscure glazing or anything that would change. You have to appreciate we have to look at this application as a fresh application,
sure,
on its merits.
No.
What was done before is closed. So we just need to understand there's absolutely no change externally, including any glazing, including anything, to what was previously. And if you can just respond to what you heard in terms of about the obscure glazing at the upper level.
There is one glazing. There's no additional glazing on the upper level, no.
Is there obscure glazing?
I'm not sure what obscure glazing.
Can you have a look at your plans?
Yeah. I've got the plans of the upper level.
Yes, just give me the sheet
elevation.
Number. Is that D208?
205 will give you the elevation.
205, one moment. Okay, thank you.
So the top level, to the beach side, there is no additional glazing. There's a window. There's no additional glazing.
And what about the planting?
The planting that has always been there as part of the balcony aspect. There is an additional.
Now, it doesn't show me on this plan, but I'd have to go to another one. But is that then glazing on that end of that balcony? At the top level balcony.
Are we talking about D205?
Sorry?
Are we talking about drawing D205?
Yes, we are.
There is no glazing on the balcony on that elevation. The glazing to the balcony only features on the front face.
Front
or the
face,
rear
so
face.
So that's masonry
the
there.
That's
isn't
masonry,
it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ms. Morridge?
Looking at D104. I'm just looking at where you've indicated W13 and D430 near the planter off
yes.
the terrace. Am I correct in thinking that the area of concern in terms of the massing or what's been referred to by the objective as the privacy screen is actually the extension of the blade wall that's coming through adjacent to the western boundary?
Again, that hasn't changed at all, that area. There is fixed glazing at the front facing the beach.
Sorry, that's not my question.
Yeah.
My question is it your understanding that it's that blade that's causing part of the view loss? And I'm just wondering, what's the purpose of the blade? Because it doesn't look like it's actually part of the terrace itself.
Are we talking about, the blade in between the walls?
So it might make it easier.
Yeah, just point.
So you see there's this blade,
yes.
solid line there.
Yeah.
My understanding is that's not part of the terrace, that area through here.
It's not part, it's part of the internal space.
Okay, so that's an internal space.
It's an internal space. It's connected, it's a little bit confusing there because there's doors shown in there, there's sliding doors that separate that space.
Okay.
But that is an internal sort of office space. There's fixed glazing in the front of that. You'll also notice on that page D104, if you notice the dotted lines, they are illustrating the view from the neighbouring tenancy and also the residence next to us, which is 107.
Sure. I'm just trying to understand what you're actually going to do in a space that's that size. It's hardly usable.
Basically, we've got two big sliding doors,
mm-hmm.
which open up the balcony area.
Sure.
And so whilst the balcony is closed, that space is completely open.
But what would you do in it?
It's literally got space for an office. My wife works from home and she runs my business from home, so
but
it's got room for a desk. And
it can't be any wider than about 1.2 metres wide.
It's about 1.8.
You wouldn't be able to get a desk in there. I'm just wondering what the purpose of it actually is.
Literally, my wife works from home for me, and so she sits there on her computer. She'll have a view of the ocean and be able to sit there and do work off a laptop. That's the sole purpose.
Okay, thank you.
Incidentally, Mr. Williams, the same deferred commencement condition as was imposed on the last occasion is recommended again this time.
I know. It's
are you in a position to meet that?
Well, absolutely. We've got the drawings and we did submit the drawings.
All right, so I just wanted to check because we wouldn't want the same thing to happen again.
Slightly confusing
if indeed
to us as well.
We did approve of the application.
We're in contact with the engineer for council and he's aware of that potential.
Right. Any further questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Thank you.
So are you Mrs. Williams or?
No, I'm Yvette Middleton, the very late town planner.
The very late town planner?
Yes.
Well, not too late, I hope. Have a seat.
Yeah, thank you.
So, sorry, can you give us your name, please? Because you're not in my list.
Yvette Middleton.
Middleton?
Yes.
And
as
you're
in case
a planner on behalf of the applicant and owner?
Yes.
Yes, please go ahead.
Well, unfortunately, I've missed what you were asking, Mr. Williams, but we understand we were happy with all the conditions bar the deferred commencement conditions requiring further details to be submitted, which Mr. Williams had understood had already been submitted.
Well,
so that was.
If we were to grant consent subject to the condition, it's easily satisfied, isn't it?
I believe so, and we've suggested to Mr. Williams that his traffic engineer speaks with councils.
We haven't had any advice from any council officer as to whether or not the previously imposed deferred commencement condition is now complied with. So if we were to grant a consent, we would have to impose the condition, but from what you say, it wouldn't be difficult to comply with it.
We don't believe so. And the only reason this whole application has been resubmitted, which was
Was
property
sentence,
due to the deferred. Were there any other questions you had regarding the development?
No. Are there any questions for this town planner, Ms. Middleton? Thank you.
Well, I do hope you do approve it then.
Well, at the conclusion of the public meeting, we will consider this and other applications and notify our decision on the council website.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
The next item is apartment 562 Fletcher Street, Bondi, and there is nobody registered to speak. Is anybody present from the applicant's or owner's side, or McGregor Westlake Architecture, or Mr. P. Sidorko, or Ms. N. Swift? No? Well, it's a pity because we had some questions that we might want to ask and nobody's turned up. So we will have to do our best to consider the application at the conclusion of the public meeting and notify our decision. That brings us to 10 Hardy Street, North Bondi. And the first speaker I have is Diana Bruherja. I'm sure if I mispronounce that, you'll correct me. Please come forward.
Can I request that the applicant, Patrick Ritchie, speak?
Yes, by all means, Mr. Ritchie. Come forward and have a seat, sir.
Sure.
And for the record, your name is Patrick Ritchie and you're the applicant from 10 Hardy Street.
Correct.
Yes, please go ahead.
Good afternoon and thank you for the opportunity to address the panel today. My name is Patrick Ritchie, the applicant of the proposed section 4.55A at 10 Hardy Street, North Bondi. I would like to point out to the panel that procedurally our application has not been an entirely fair process. Although we tried contacting council on numerous occasions to check the progress of our application, we were ultimately unable to receive feedback on any concerns council may have had with our application. Had we received communications and feedback from council, we feel we would have been in a far better position to alter the design to suit both parties. It should be noted that there was no public objections to our application, although having been on notice to 16 properties, nor were there any objections to the original application of development of the site, but rather we received two letters of support. Visually, the bulk and scale of the carport is compatible with the existing streetscape, which consists of apartment block dwellings with garages built to the boundary. The neighbouring property at 12 Hardy Street has a garage built to the boundary as well, whilst a relatively recent development at 6 Hardy Street, a dual occupancy, has a hard stand parking. Our proposal will enhance the dual occupancy dwelling as it has been designed by the same architect to complement the original design of this dual occupancy. The proposed application does not affect the bulk and scale of the approved dual occupancy. I'd also like to bring to your attention a similar project at 16 Owen Street, North Bondi, which was recommended for approval by the DBU and approved by the panel on the 26th of April 2019. The project seeks to convert the garage space to a habitable space, adding an additional 24 square metres, bringing the total floor space ratio to 0.87 to 1. The application at 16 Owen Street went through an identical process and the planning controls are exactly the same, yet it was approved within 4 weeks of lodgement. Our project equally has as much merit as 16 Owen Street. It is logical and fair for our project also to be approved in a similar manner. Having not been given the opportunity to make any prior comments on our application, we would now be willing to compromise by deleting the carport. We do, however, request to the panel to rule in our favour of the conversion of the approved single garage into a habitable space, as it does not increase the envelope of the approved development. Thank you for your consideration and time today.
Thank you. Do you have a car or cars in the family?
Yes.
So where would you park them if you deleted the carport?
On the hard stand out the front. We were hoping to, as you have a driveway into the garage now.
Yes.
We would propose to park the car there, but delete the actual structure if that's the problem. Because in the council's the DBU. We understand that a lot of issue relating to the actual structure of the carport. So we'd be happy to delete the carport, but we would like to hope to be able to park the car
on the hard stand,
out on the hard stand in front of the existing structure.
I understand that.
Similar to 6 Hardy Street.
Right. And I've got one other question. Mm-hmm. If this was such a good idea, why didn't you do it in the first place?
Because in regards to not having a carport?
No, in converting the area of the garage into habitable space.
After the approval, we realised Owen Street, and in fact Nancy Street, number 5 Nancy Street, had these carports, and that's why we thought, let's put an application forward. Having both properties within our area approved for a carport and a hard stand.
And is there any reason why you have that rather large window within the garage area?
That was approved with our original drawings.
I know it was approved, but what was the reason for having a window in a garage on that side?
Well, people do that nowadays. People like to see a car. Light into the garage.
I'm
people
clearly
store.
Out of touch. I didn't realise.
But it's also a storage. A lot of people put things in a garage.
Yes.
And the natural light in there is beneficial.
So where will the storage go then?
The front garage, the existing opening to the garage, would stay the same. The facade stays the same. No impact on that. But instead of opening to a garage, it would open up into approximately a 1.2 metre storage area in depth.
We were shown that this morning.
Okay, yeah.
And the bins would go there.
The bins would go there and bicycle storage.
Yeah.
That's a story for others.
Yeah. Okay. Any further questions of this gentleman? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, is Diana come forward, please? Now, you can tell me the correct pronunciation of your name, because I'm sure I got it awfully wrong.
Bradua.
Yeah.
And hopefully I pronounced your name correctly.
You're the town planner representing the applicant.
Correct. So,
yes. Please go ahead.
Honourable Mr. Steen, Mr. Morish, Ms. Morish, Ms. Morrell and Ms. Mora, good afternoon. My name's Diana Bradua, head planner from EG Advisory and Planning. I'd like to present the credentials of the modification application before you today. Firstly, I'd like to briefly just point out there is an error in the description in the report. As you saw today, we are referring to a single garage, not a double garage. It appears based on the council report there are two main areas of difference in planning opinion. They are the effect of the streetscape as a result of the carport and the conversion of the garage to a study, including storage and bike storage, and secondly, the issue of precedent. Note that the single car space was approved as part of the original development application, which may answer the question from Patrick's presentation. If the panel feels that the design of the carport is of concern, we can consider removing it from this application. In regard to FSR, FSR is a crude measure of bulk, and it's not just numerical. It's about creating within a set space the right amount of visual bulk. The conversion of the garage to a habitable room does not increase the bulk of the dwelling. However, it is required to be calculated in the calculation of FSR. The space is required to improve the internal amenity given that the combined living, dining, kitchen is quite somewhat small. So what are the planning impacts and streetscape impacts then? The only material change from the exterior is the change from the invisible tilt-up door to an invisible hinge door, which we use to access the bike storage from the exterior within the timber cladding, which is already as approved in the DA. A window has already been approved as part of the DA. The planning impacts are therefore zero. The bulk and scale do not change. We're not proposing any change to the height, side and rear setbacks, landscape controls. These are all complied with and are all already approved. In regard to the second matter, precedent has been set a number of times, many times. I'd like to remind the panel that there are many examples within a 700 metre radius of North Bondi where FSR exceedance has occurred on dual occupancy developments. And these are using the same FSR controls and similar sized sites. These are literally our neighbours. Patrick pointed out 16 Owen Street, North Bondi, which the panel approved an FSR of 0.8:1, and then under delegation, similar, same application, was approved to go up to 0.87:1. 13 Rayner Street, located one block behind the site where the planning panel approved an FSR of 0.76:1. That was actually in the 27th of May this year. And if I may, panel, show you an extract from that report. Interestingly, council also cited a number of examples of dual occupancies which have actually exceeded the FSR. And for some reason, 10 Hardy Street has also been included in, as an example, in order to support the dual occupancy development for 13 Rayner Street. So Rayner Street was approved for 0.76:1, which is exactly the same situation as our case. There is one critical difference, though, is in these examples, and I have other list of examples I wish to present, you can see the visual bulk. In our case, it's all contained within the garage. So in conclusion, I must ask this question. Will this proposal look any different from the street or from adjoining properties with the additional numerical FSR? Panel members, this is an excellent high-quality development, as exemplified by no public submissions received, and I commend this application to you.
Thank you. And thank you to keeping to your time limit. I appreciate that. Look, I've just got
practice.
One question in relation to this crude measure of FSR. In the report, and you can tell me whether this is incorrect or correct, it says that the originally lodged DA exceeded the FSR control with a proposal of 0.72:1 or a 20.4% variation. That's the originally submitted DA.
That's correct. We originally submitted that. Then we received,
Then you received a deferral letter requesting compliance with the control, and amended plans were submitted and approved, were 0.65 to 1 or a 9% exceedance.
Correct.
And later in the report, it indicates that with the variation to the FSR, taking into account the internal area of the garage as floor space, the FSR was taken to 0.77 to 1 or 30% variation to the standard.
Yeah, so we had our architect triple check the calculations.
Right.
And we believe the discrepancy relates to how the storage has been calculated. And we actually excluded the area of the bike storage, so I think that's the difference in discrepancy.
Well, it's not much of a difference.
It's not much when you do the maths, no. It doesn't turn out to be much.
But so generally that's accepted, that there is up to a 30% variation from the standard.
Correct, and as I like to point out, and if I could circulate to the panel, it's not uncommon, and certainly Rayner Street was identical.
If you want to hand that across so we can see what you're talking about, thank you.
I think that would be useful.
So there's two sheets. So that's from Council's report to the panel, dated May 27th of this year, and it listed our property as well as an example of a number of dual occupancies which have exceeded the FSR. 13 Rayner was approved, 0.76.
We'll have a look at that.
This is just a bit more historical. I don't know if that's of interest. The panel's probably familiar.
We'll have a look at that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any further questions from the members of the panel to the planner, please?
Sorry, I was overboard. And the date of this report is the 27th of May, 2019.
Thank you.
And that's a report to this panel.
Right. Are there any further questions?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you very much indeed.
No problem. Did you have a question?
Oh, sorry, can you come back?
Oh, yeah, sure.
To
with the carport, the manoeuvre, weren't you going to raise that, Caitlin?
Would you want to ask her a question?
Well, we did have one question, but the comment made by the applicant perhaps means it's not necessary, but I had concerns about whether or not you could actually back a car out of these carports.
Right.
Because the distance between the columns that are close to the street, almost on the street, and the width of the driveway throat, I think you'd have to be a really, really, really good driver
right.
to get out there without going over the verge. Did you provide any diagrams around how the cars would manoeuvre in?
Not to my knowledge, I don't think so. As we said, we didn't have any communication from council, so we didn't actually... No one came back to us with a question about the actual function of the carport.
Mm-hmm.
No, the answer is no. But the space actually was approved as part of the original DA.
Yeah, it's the columns that caused the problem.
It's the columns, right. But okay. As we've said, we're happy to delete it, and if that's an issue, it doesn't change the elevation whatsoever. And I've actually got another diagram just showing the change in the door. This is what's been approved versus... Sorry, this has been what's approved, and this is what the application would be if the panel wishes to support it. And it's just a change in the hinge door. You can't even... It's an invisible door, very modern. You can't see the difference of whether it's a panel door or a tilt door opening up to the storage, bin storage and the bike storage.
Thank you.
So...
Any further questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much. So along with the other matters at the conclusion of the public meeting, we'll consider this application and notify our decision on the council website. That brings us to 6-8 Diamond Bay Road for clues. And the first...
Is it too late?
Sorry?
My apologies. I've been informed that we did submit a traffic report with the application.
Well, we'll take that into account.
Sorry,
we'll have access to it.
Yeah. Sorry, but what I was trying to say is we didn't receive any feedback specifically from a traffic engineer from council. So.
Thank you. The first speakers are Doug and Maurice King. Doug and Maurice King.
I'm here, Maurice, representing myself.
Come forward, please, ma'am. Have a seat. And for the record, your name is Maurice King from 735A Old South Head Road, Vaucluse.
Correct.
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much, panel. Basically, we put a pretty detailed submission in when the first DA was put out for public submission in July. And then the next thing we knew, we've got an amended DA taking away property that was on Unit 3's title, which would be basically level with us, and putting Unit 3's proposed entitlement into an area called common property, common open space, provision for a garden and a barbecue area, which obviously would be accessible to all occupants of the proposed development at 6 to 8 Diamond Bay Road. We're not objecting per se to everybody getting together and all the rest of it, but the barbecue is basically adjacent to our garden, which is adjacent to our washing area and our kitchen, dining room, bedroom area. Noise travels up when you have a group of people. If the barbecue is in constant use, especially if there are group gatherings, we're going to be getting the smoke coming up to our bedroom and also to the main bathroom, and that goes through to another bedroom which is occupied. We are also not happy with the fact that there's going to be a timber walkway which passes by a couple of the neighbours, including ours, the common boundary, because apparently to save one of the trees, which may or may not be savable, for want of a better word, it needs to be protected, and it can only be protected if there's a timber walkway and not pavers or concrete. And we're a little concerned that there will be a lot of noise if that's the access to the common area of people going backwards and forwards, especially if there is communal gathering, not necessarily from within the residential complex, but from people that actually are coming to have a party, partake of food, drinks, whatever. So it will be going on, and hopefully the area will, under strata laws, be subject to the noise regulations that New South Wales provides. So basically, we would just like to have a paved walkway, given that if the tree can't be retained, then that could be the alternative to a timber walkway. And also, too, that, you know, we don't need to have the continual noise and smoke from barbecues in our sleeping area. I mean, we've put up with a lot of noise at the moment in the two houses that are being used by backpackers that are going to be demolished for this development, and that's down that end of the garden, and it comes straight up to us. So this is going to be basically on our doorstep, for want of a better word.
Yes. Thank you. Any questions of Ms. King?
No, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, panel.
Is Dr. Mickler or Mrs. Mickler, please come forward. Have a seat.
Thank you.
And is your name Dr. Mickler from 733 Capital A Old South Head Road?
Yes, and I'm representing myself and my wife,
yes.
Cara. So thank you for the opportunity to make this presentation today. Just really, it's a summary of what we put in our submission previously on the 28th of October, and also with three neighbours earlier than that, which includes our neighbours Doug and Maurice King. We have some concerns about privacy, the privacy screening of the southwestern balcony of proposed Unit 10. The balcony area is shown on the plans as a circular area with a round table or seating. At the moment, there's no screening of that. It juts out from Unit 10, and it would have gun barrel views of our backyard and also into two bedrooms on the back of our property. So we would hope that that balcony can be adjusted, maybe without that piece jutting out. If not, it should at least be screened. We're also concerned about the privacy screens on the other proposed balconies, just wanting to ensure that, again, there's not the potential of, like, privacy issues, but also of noise being transferred.
Which balcony can you describe that?
So they would be the balconies on the back of the building. They come off the living area and dining areas, and on the side, it's hard to tell from the plans, they're shown as having some screening, but, you know, we'd be concerned if they've got slats or if those slats are facing the wrong way or if it provides the possibility of noise coming through as well as, you know, privacy implications. That we'd hope that they, that they're sort of fit for purpose in that regard. In terms of the construction impacts, we note that there's a lot of excavation proposed. That's quite close to the boundary. So just in summary, we'd hope that there would be a detailed dilapidation investigation before as well as afterwards in case there was any cracking or any problem with that. And also that any adverse impacts from the excavation in terms of like dust and dirt be ameliorated or ideally dealt with as best as possible in the process. Tree removal and landscaping, there's a lot of trees being removed and we understand that you know, not all the trees can be retained, but there's two that are very mature, close to the balcony line. They provide for a lot of privacy. They're really very healthy trees. If they don't survive, we would hope that they would be replaced with something similar or at least of a reasonable height, not very sort of, you know, small shrubs below the fence line. And finally, in terms of the common space, we'd echo the concerns of Maurice and Doug King, in that there'll now be a walkway running along our fence line, which might have a lot of traffic all the time, people going to the public area out the back. We are unclear as to what lighting is proposed for that, but that might have an impact as well. Certainly there will be noise if the way in which that's paved is not done appropriately, so we have some concerns about that as well. There are main concerns. Basically, in summary, privacy, construction impacts, tree removal and landscaping, and issues to do with that common space. But we're not opposed to the development. I'd like to stress that as well. We're just hoping that it's done right.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions of the submitter?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Alex Smith or Anthony Betros? Who wants to come first? Have a seat, please. And your name is Alex Smith,
yes.
From CSA Architects on behalf of the applicant.
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Betros had to go to another council meeting, so he sends his apologies.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll respond to the two submissions we just heard.
Yes.
Firstly, the first person, 735A, the common space is there because it's a requirement of the council's development control plan. We are happy to delete the barbecue component. That's, you know, not necessary if that's a concern for the neighbours. And similarly, if that tree wasn't going to survive or didn't stay, we were also happy not to have a timber walkway. We, you know, certainly don't have an issue changing that to hard paving. Regarding the second submission that we just heard, that we've been pretty diligent in making sure that there is no privacy or overlooking to those properties. So the windows have either got louvers, obscure glass, or high sills. The two parts of the building that the last speaker mentioned regarding screening, at the rear there is screening shown, and that is a balcony off a bedroom, so it's, I think, considered sort of low impact in any case, but there is a screen there. On the front, where he mentioned there's a circular balcony for Unit 10, we intentionally didn't put a screen there because we went upstairs to the owner of at 731 Old South Head Road, the top floor unit, to make sure that we wanted to have a look at what his view was. And we actually set the whole top floor back after that visit to his unit, and that's why the top floor is set back. If we were to screen that bit of balcony, that would potentially affect his view. But I could, just looking at the plan now, for the overlooking back towards number 733, you could put a screen running along the edge of the slab, which wouldn't impact on 731. I've just marked it here in red. I don't know if you'll be able to see it, but if it was just running straight up there, sure. That would prevent any looking back to 733, and it wouldn't block the view of 731.
Can you just tell me what the separation distance there is?
From where to where, sorry?
From the neighbour's property to that point.
Sorry, you mean from Dr. Mickler's property?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. The closest property, yep.
Just one sec. Can't have the plan back.
No, he is, of course.
Thanks. From that balcony?
Yep.
From the closest point, it's about 12 metres.
12 metres,
okay. Probably just under, yeah.
Yeah, I thought there was a reasonable separation.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, thank you.
Sorry, can you also tell me what the level difference is between that balcony and the floor? The lowest floor level, or the highest floor level of 733?
The RL on our balcony is 7165.
Yep.
Now I've got to try and read this. There's a window sill height of 69.36. That's a window sill. Mm-hmm. So that's 2 metres lower to the window sill, which let's say it's a metre above floor level.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions of Mr. Smith?
The proposal is to retain that gum tree in the rear, which
yes.
is significant in terms
yep.
of the district as well as all the immediate properties. And we have a report to that effect.
Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And you've indicated that you're prepared to delete the barbecue.
Correct.
And then we understand that to retain the tree, it would need to have the impervious surface of timber.
Well, it could just be in the vicinity of the tree. We don't have to have it beyond that.
Okay, so in fact it could be brought back just to that...
where the root zone is.
Root zone, yes.
Yeah, so if you look at drawing 5...
Yep.
You'll see coming out of the building, there's a paved ramp. Then you get to where the tree is, and it's a square section of timber, boards.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that, there's another walkway that takes you to the backyard. That could be paved.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Thank you. And it could still be permeable with paving as opposed to paving
could.
Stones, because we
yes.
don't want to increase the non-permeable area.
Yes,
okay.
It could, yep.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Any further questions?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you.
We'll consider this application after the public meeting is closed and notify our decision on the council website. So that brings us to 671 to 679 Old South Head Road, Vaucluse. The number of speakers registered to speak. The first one is Benjamin Nicol. Benjamin Nicol present. Oh, Dr. Dov Samuel. Come forward, please, sir. Have a seat, please. And your name is Dr. Dov Samuel from apartment 12 to Ocean View Avenue, Vaucluse.
Correct.
Yes, please go ahead.
This construction site is 3 to 4 meters away from our lungs. This makes a severe health issue. I'm talking respiratory problems, etc. There are elderly people in this building. There are babies. I am 70 years old. I have respiratory problem. Rona will speak after me. She's 87 years old. The dust and the noise is very hazardous, and it's just under our nose. I believe that when I understand that money is important, it's all about money. But money is not more important than health. There are 24 families in this building, and I would ask the panel to take into account this serious issue of health against money. If this program will go ahead, I won't be surprised if in the future the council will be blamed for deterioration, for health deterioration of the residents. I think that the whole idea is completely wrong, hazardous, and I hope that it will be cancelled as soon as possible.
Thank you. Any questions of Dr. Samuel?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Izhar Ronan, on behalf of Alan Aaron. Is Mr. Izhar Ronan present? Ronan. R-O-N-E-N. Okay. Cynthia and Emmanuel Castricios. Come forward, please.
Thank you. Can I have them just sit with
you? Yes, of course. Have a seat, both of you.
I'll be the mouthpiece.
So it's Cynthia and Emmanuel Castricios from 699 Old South End Road.
669.
669, I beg your pardon. Thank you. Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. We own a mixed residential commercial property which adjoins the site of the proposed development. We've been operating our family business, Vaucluse Ocean Foods, from these premises for over 35 years. We wish to raise the panel's awareness to, firstly, the hazardous traffic impacts to our community that this development will create. The traffic assessment report has not appropriately been carried out. It appears to be a recycled report from an unrelated project, referring in section 1 to an out-of-school hours care operation, which is not relevant to this DA. The report also raises other concerns. We dispute the accuracy of the statement in section 6 that the proposed development will only bring about a net daily increase of 5 vehicle movements. This is clearly incorrect, as the number of dwellings would increase from 5 freestanding houses to 16 units with 35 car and 6 motorbike spaces. In addition, the proposed car park only allows for 2 visitor car spaces in total, which will cause an even greater parking demand in our adjoining shopping village. Also, the proposed single entry exit ramp to the underground car park will foreseeably cause a very serious traffic risk. Old South Head Road is an arterial road with just one lane travelling in each direction. There's only provision for one holding bay on the plan, which results in a potential traffic hazard with the likelihood of cars creating a bottleneck and increasing congestion. We ask that Council please require the applicant to provide an adequate traffic report in order to gain a more realistic assessment of the traffic impacts of the proposed development. Secondly, we wish to raise the panel's awareness to our concern with the proposed excavation required for the underground car park, which is excessive in the context of the site and results in the proposed development encroaching the boundary setback underground. The geotechnical report that has been provided is of limited utility. As confirmed in section 3.1, the inspection of the actual development site was limited to hand tools, with two of the five holes drilled only going to 1.2 metres in depth. And as stated in section 3.2, no inspection has ever been carried out on our adjoining site, nor has one been requested, despite the proposed excavation all the way to our northern boundary. Our building was built prior to 1940 using lime mortar, and we fear that it and our footings may not withstand this excessive excavation. Ultimately, the requisite underpinning that will be required for the car park has serious consequences to our old footings, and nothing in the DA proposal has any reference to the remediation to our building boundary during the construction process. The applicant has made no effort to undertake a proper geotechnical inspection to fully understand the impacts and the potential for damage, loss of rent and loss of trade to the businesses operating on our site. We urge Council to ensure that a thorough geotechnical investigation is carried out and that construction is undertaken in a manner that will not adversely affect our property. We furthermore have received advice from an architect that we need to have a full spectrum dilapidation report for our property and assert that this should be a condition of consent. May I formally request additional time to just conclude?
Yes.
Thank you.
If you will conclude.
I will. Thank you. Thirdly, and to conclude, we wish to raise the panel's awareness to the issues of non-compliance. FSR is not compliant. It exceeds the Waverley DCP control by 11%. And this represents an overdevelopment of the site and results in significant adverse impacts in loss of privacy and light and unreasonable overshadowing to our property. As illustrated in the shadow diagrams, the proposed development overshadows our entire property all the way to our southern boundary, overlooking a number of windows, a skylight and the back garden, which is the only outdoor area for the two residential units on our property. Consideration should be given to lowering the height of the development on our northern boundary to rectify these issues. And building length is also not compliant. At 59 metres, it's more than double the DCP control of 24 metres. And as a result of its non-compliance, the proposed development will appear bulky from the street and is inconsistent with the scale of the buildings in the streetscape. In summary, it would appear that the developer has failed to take into consideration the local village feel of our surrounds and our established business in his proposed development. And we request a further dialogue with Council as the arbitrators to agree on an end result that is mutually successful for all concerned. Thank you
very much.
And thank you for the extra leeway.
That's all right.
I've never done this and I thought we had 4 minutes.
No, thank you. That's fine.
Thank you.
Are there any questions from the members of the panel?
Just in terms of there's two flats above the shop in that location.
There's one above the shop and one at the rear of the shops on ground level.
Right. Okay then. Thank you.
Just a quick question. The location of your property, I'm assuming, is
the corner.
Just disappeared. It's on the corner. So it's in between the street
yes.
and the boundary.
So our northern boundary.
Single lot.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yes, it was. Our property was incorrectly identified as fully commercial in the DA application, but it is a mixed commercial residential with two residential units.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next speaker is Rona Klenar. Come forward, please, Rona. Have a seat, please, when you're ready. And your name is Rona Clanar, and you are from apartment 16, number 12, Ocean View Avenue, Auckland.
Yes, correct.
Yes, please go ahead.
I have been living in my ground floor west-facing flat for 30 years. And there, as Dorf said, there are other elderly people living in the area and families. And we have quite a number of concerns about the proposed buildings of the adjacent area. Mainly the proximity, which will now occur. One of the problems will be blocking out the light. We're facing west and having these large buildings so close by is going to make a, this a problem, especially that, you know, we do rely on some of that west light. And also, of course, the excavation and the drilling that will go on, which we unavoidable, but, you know, something that one has to contend with. And the dust, the mess, as Dorf said, you know, this is not a very healthy sort of situation. And I want to appeal for as much space as possible between the proposed buildings and where we are. You know, hopefully, we were hoping that it would be about 10 meters between our building and the ones that are going up. And, you know, we ask for consideration about this, you know, both from a health perspective and privacy, and, you know, having to live under these circumstances, which may not be so pleasant with the noise and etc. But of course, we realize, you know, progress is and, you know, looks as everything's going ahead, but we do appeal for this extra bit of space between our building and the new one.
What do you understand the separation is on the plans?
Do you know exactly what the separation is, Dawn?
Well, it's very close.
Well, we can look at it and measure it.
It's just...
All right.
Very close.
All right. Thank you.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions of Ms. Clunard? Thank you very much. Yvette Middleton or Mr. Brian Myerson, who's going to go first? Yes. Yes, Michael Waterman, and Mr. Brian Myerson, architects, and Ms. Yvette Middleton, planner.
Yes, from GSA Planning.
So who's going to go first?
Well, I can start. I can make a small presentation and then we can answer questions.
All right.
Would that be preferable?
Yes, sure.
Can I request through you, Chair, to respond to some of the issues that we've heard in
yes.
the first place and then make the general presentation?
Yes.
Okay, well, in that case,
all right, well,
Brian might... Thank you for the opportunity in any event to speak with you.
Thank you to the panel and Mr. Chair. Just on Dr. Samuel's point, obviously, our client and the builder will be working in accordance with all the health and safety requirements and restrict dust and noise to a minimum. And we will make a note that there are residents that are going to be affected by this. So we will do our best within the framework of the rules of building controls. to the point about that Cynthia made about the traffic. I might let Yvette comment on that. Again, excavation and dilapidation. There will be a dilapidation report provided, and all the neighbours will sites will be attended in that report and included in that report. But the proposal is actually set back about, I think, 4 metres from that side boundary, or 4.5 metres. And there is a landscape area between the two with about a half a metre of soil depth. And currently the building on that site is about 900 or a metre from that boundary. So there will be a more breathing space than there currently is. Then I just want to comment on what Rona pointed out. She's asked for hopefully 10 metres separation between the buildings. In fact, we've got 14 metres at the northern end and about 10.5 at the southern end. And it is a well-articulated building, so that's a sort of a chevron-shaped design that's articulated that I think will make the building feel less close to the neighbours. We also understand that the most of the apartments in that adjoining building on Ocean View Avenue address the east, but we do understand that they have windows to the west and they're relying on sunlight and ventilation from the western side as well. That's why we've indeed increased the separation through the process of the DA assessment between the two buildings.
That's all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Ms. Middleton.
I'd also add that we are retaining the existing residential subdivision form of the 5 dwellings by providing the 5 separate elements of this articulated building. As said already, it's highly articulated. It's not presenting as a blank facade. And we point out that behind is a very large building also. I think it's 75 metres and ours is 59. So the length is also not inconsistent with that nearby. The excavation...
One is the length and one is the width. That's the difference.
Yes, but if you're looking in terms of the mass in an aerial photograph... Ours would be shorter than the one next to it, notwithstanding that one is facing the street and the other is facing a side boundary.
But would you consider it's a positive precedent?
I think the way it's been broken up into the 5 elements...
Sorry, no, I'm talking about the building behind you, which is what I think you're referring to.
Yes.
It's all right, the hesitation answers the question.
Ms. Morris, the one behind, I think, is a different... sort of format to this one. This one provides streetscape frontage to each block. The one behind provides a single element facing the street, but to get to each block, each part of the block, is a long trip down the side of the building or through the centre of the building. And that's where I think this one has a stronger streetscape presentation. The FSR has been discussed in detail and negotiated with council, and there is a VPA that forms part of the conditions. The FSR was reduced from the original proposal. There's been a little bit of toing and froing, just to give you some background, because there's a sliver of land along the back of Cynthia and Emmanuel's block, which was included originally for landscaped open space, and then because of the differing zoning, council requested that be changed from removed from the consideration. So the FSR has sort of gone up and down and up and down a few times. So that would explain to you why there's several clause 4.6s. However, the one that is before you is the one that has been discussed in great detail with council, and they actually asked for some areas of FSR to be increased because they preferred an entrance that was a little closer to the front of the building rather than recessed for each of the five entries.
Incidentally, we should draw attention, in case you don't know, to one of the clause 4.6 is the one in relation to height.
Yes.
For the cutting and pasting, no doubt, partially relates to a site in 7 Carlisle Street, Vaucluse.
Rosebank.
It's close, closer.
Well, at least it's sort of nearby, I guess. That's good. That's good.
That's not the FSI one, this is the height one.
Yes, yes, and I believe it relates, the height non-compliance relates only to the top of a lift shaft at the northern
Look,
end.
Look, I had another question, and I might as well ask it now in relation to the clause 4.6 is. The FSR one in particular, because that's probably the most important one for this application, cross-references the Statement of Environmental Effects several times and seems to say we rely upon what's in the SEE in conjunction with this document. Is it correct to do that?
We have actually quite robust internal discussions regarding that, because we've had advice from, well, from various legal firms, one saying it is, one saying it isn't. My personal opinion is it should be in it, because then it makes the document complete. And to that end, with the height one, we can arrange quite quickly for that to be remedied. So,
sure. But the document is supposed to be complete in itself and satisfy the decision maker.
I agree with you.
That the exception is supportable in the circumstances. Yeah. So.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah. Anyway, so I just raised the issue with you.
Yeah.
Sorry, you go on. I interrupted you. I beg your pardon. Did you want to say anything about traffic? Mr. Myerson referred to you.
Yes, sorry.
That was raised by one of the objectors, or two of the objectors.
Yes, I think something that wasn't realised perhaps by the objector, that with the removal of the redundant driveway crossings, there will actually be another space or two on the street. So that will assist a little bit with parking for her business. In this location, there's excellent public transport. There's three different bus routes that can be utilised. There's cycleways, there's car share pods, there's, you know, a myriad of ways that visitors can arrive apart from parking on the site. And I would say that the number of spaces required has been provided, it's just the allocation has been varied slightly to provide 2 instead of 3 visitor spaces, but 33 instead of 32 resident spaces. Does that answer your question?
Well.
So the visitor parking is increased, did you say?
No, the visitor parking instead of 3 is 2, but on-street parking, on-street parking with the removal of the redundant driveway crossings increases. No, but it's a requirement with a consolidation of a site that the redundant driveways are removed.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm just pointing out that there
I suppose this would be dedicated to the actual units and increase the visitor.
Well, that is an option, but I believe some of them are stackers, is that right? No stackers in this one. Okay. Oh, my mistake. It's a roller door. I thought it was a stacker thing.
No.
We could alter that.
Yeah, so that can be adjusted to provide 3 instead
that
of...
That can be adjusted,
2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so if I can just add another point to that issue, these are all really townhouses, and that's the different approach in this development. It's unusual. And each townhouse, I think, has got two spaces. So in terms of visitor parking, it's possible, it's probable that some of these townhouses will only have one car, and so the second space can be used by visitors. I've seen that happening.
Residents of one of the other townhouses?
No, no. So if you,
to the other townhouses?
Yeah, if you've got a sorry, Jan, I didn't want to interrupt you, sorry.
No, I can't see you allowing your neighbours, visitors, to park in your...
No, that's not what I mean. Right. What I mean is if you've got a townhouse that's got two spaces, yes, and you're only using one, your visitor will be able to park in the other space of your townhouse.
Yes, your own visitor.
And that's likely to occur.
Yeah.
And one other point that was raised was the six motorcycle spaces. It doesn't necessarily follow that all six will be used all the time, in addition to all the parking spaces in terms of traffic generation. So I just wanted to point out that it was less likely to be potentially 30... Yeah. Four cars and six motorcycles plus 12 bicycles, mm-hmm, and all using the road at the same time.
Do you have any questions?
A couple of questions, actually. With the stairway, the lobbies that you've got, what's the clearance between the balustrade and the wall?
That looks like about 1.3 metres.
I noticed that there was a number of comments from the design review panel about concern around the depth of the building and the lack of light into the middle, particularly of the townhouse units underneath. Did you consider whether it's possible to provide skylights through the large upper floor units to address that?
Indeed, that's exactly what we had before. And those comments were on the previous design. Mm-hmm. Those comments from the panel about the depth. So the depth of these townhouses has been decreased by about 2 metres since those comments were made, and that is, so it's been addressed by in fact condensing the whole design and removing what we had light wells in the previous design.
Where were the light wells previously?
They were central in each of the floor plans.
Another thing we did was we reduced the depth of the balconies so that there's less shadow cast on the glass. The overall depth of the townhouses are within the SEP 65 requirement from glass line to glass line, and you're getting light from both directions. So the living space will be well lit. There is a void that connects the stair, so daylight will also, that was another design feature, to get some of the daylight from the ground.
But you're talking about the lobbies, not the internal stairs, I see.
So I'm talking about the internal stairs in the units.
So where's the skylight over the internal, because there's an apartment that goes over the top of them.
There are skylights in the very upper unit.
Okay, but that will help the upper unit, but it won't help the townhouses below.
I guess what I'm saying is that those townhouses below are serviced by light through the interconnecting living room on the ground floor, so we'll get light from both east and west.
So you're relying on the light borrowed over the other.
No, there's no borrowed light. It's direct daylight from both east and west on the ground floor.
So on the one side, your room depth is 5 and a bit metres, and on the other side, on the east side of the internal staircase, it's 7 metres deep. And that's why the council planners requested us to condense the plan and rely on direct light from east and west rather than via an internal light well. Okay. And it reduced the bulk of the building.
And my last question is in relation to the building length, because it substantially exceeds the DCP requirement of 24 metres. You've made reference to the building at the back of this development. Are you aware of any other buildings in the visual catchment of this site that have a similar length?
There would be examples. There's one. I mean, I don't really think that's a justification necessarily. But there's the aged care development.
It's
opposite the cemetery in Old South Head Road, which is a much bigger building, much bulkier. But our approach here is, this is a design of townhouses, and we've got a lobby. We've got four lobbies along the length of the building that articulate the design and articulate the presentation of the building to Old South Head Road. We think it's a better product than blocks of units that have windows facing each other on the sides and affect each other's amenity. And we've designed this so that the balconies are angled, so that they're facing northeast and northwest, and we think that it's a good housing model that our client wants to provide in this locality. There are not many townhouses. There are lots of apartments being built. And we actually support this approach, and we thought it would be an innovative model and a good way. In other words, it's almost like the old terrace house model that everyone admires in inner cities like Paddington, inner city areas in Europe. And we think it's a good option to the typical apartment block.
Does it make any difference? I'm sorry. Does it make any difference that this is on a main road? It's not on a back street.
It does. Yes, I agree. Each house has a presentation to the street, and not to the side. And I think it's presenting to a main road and in a sort of articulated manner like this provides visual interest.
It also gives the opportunity for rear gardens for the lower units at the back, again like the terrace house model, which you see around Paddington, Woollahra, Bondi,
yeah,
etc. So it's not that far from where we are for this kind of thing.
Really. I suppose the comment may be, though, with a group of terraces or a row of terraces, you don't
get some
room without
some variation
in the street,
right.
And whether, in fact, have you thought about an opportunity to provide a break in the development?
We have, and we see each of the lobbies as being a break in the massing of the building. But I think there are many rows of terrace houses where there's one row that was in a publication recently of 48 terrace houses in George Street in Redfern, I think, which is considered the best terrace row in Australia. So I think there's many. Okay, but I can show you the Instagram post if you like. But
is it four stories?
Probably three stories, yeah.
And historically, many of the Paddington terraces were three and four stories.
We know that, but
with basement.
In the visual context.
Yeah, but with separate basement apartments and often top floors over shops that might be two-storey and things like that. So there is sort of precedent in that model for greater density as well through historical alterations.
Okay, if I can add another point, this development has garden areas in front of the houses as well, between the building, the proposed terraces and Old South Head Road, which will provide visual interest and visual relief and a better landscape quality than I think you'd get from an apartment building.
Any further questions?
We may wish to respond to the concern about the residential flats are attached to the commercial operation on the
land. I think the one apartment is at the rear of the building, and there's a little carport and that's actually owned by our client. That's not going to be changed.
No.
So there's no impact directly on that one. And we've done shadow analysis here, which shows the shadowing by the existing house, which is only 900 plus an eave, there's probably like about 675 millimetres from that boundary, given the old building code regulations. And now it's going to, the new project's going to be 4.5 metres away from that building, but there's no additional overshadowing impact on those windows. It's shown in these shadow diagrams, which is done by, not by us, but by our surveyor. Okay.
Any further questions?
I just have one. I don't know if it's you or an architect, but I've only seen a very small black and white photo montage of what this would look like in the street. Yeah.
I'm happy to provide this. Can I add to that, if you haven't seen the montages, the presentation is a face brick building, so the articulation of the facade is not a blank masonry facade. It's got detailed face brickwork, which is an approach we've been using on quite a few multi-residential buildings, one of which just recently won an award at Woollahra Council because of that face brick detailing. Which was one of the reasons, but also that's the top level is clad in a metal, so it articulates the building in terms of height as well. And there's a mixture of face bricks and glazed bricks.
Did you say fake brick?
Face.
Oh,
face. Sorry.
Sorry, I thought it was fake news.
No, no.
Unfortunately, there will be on the file, and I'll have to look at the materials finishes.
Yes. Yeah. If I can add another point, this streetscape has got a tradition of face brick buildings, apartment buildings, mainly the red brick buildings. But we as a practice like exploring that medium of face brick work in multi-residential buildings because of the established longevity of the material.
And
the language and the attractiveness of the material. I know it goes in and out of fashion, but we believe in it.
Can I ask one further question? You've got your driveway external to the building, and just looking at the plan, so I'm looking at ground floor plan, there's a white area that is next to roughly the kitchen dining room on unit one.
That's a roof, isn't it?
What is that white area?
I think that's the roof over the driveway. And if your question is, can that be landscaped? I'm sure it can as well. And I think it should.
Okay, so I won't ask my next question then.
It should. And it
thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, all of you. As with the other matters, at the conclusion of the public meeting, we'll consider this application and notify our decision on the council website. That brings us to 7, 9 and 11 Bondi Road, Bondi Junction. A number of speakers are registered to speak. And the first speaker I have is Mrs. Neil Leah Johan. Yes, of course. Come forward, sir. Have a seat.
Thanks very much.
And your name, Mr. Johan?
First name is Ron, R-O-N, at the same address as my wife.
Yes, that's 30 Edmund Street.
Correct.
Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to raise my concern with the panel regarding this development application. My main concern is the overshadowing of neighbouring dwellings brought about by this proposed development and its impact on reducing the amount of natural light in living areas, as well as blocking the deployment of solar collection devices such as solar hot water systems and photovoltaic cells. Can I get you to refer to page 315 of the supporting documentation attached to the agenda?
Yes.
So.
Okay. Yes.
All right. If I could refer you to paragraph 3. The third paragraph clearly states that the proposal will result in overshadowing of the adjoining pair of semi-detached dwellings for most of the day. This statement is backed up by the shadow diagram submitted in support of the development application. This situation is clearly in breach of the LEP and ADG's objectives. The ADG states a minimum of 4 hours of solar access should be retained to solar collectors on neighboring buildings. Furthermore, the claim made later on in the same paragraph that the living area windows are orientated towards the south is incorrect. A quick examination of the shadow diagram will reveal that the majority of the living area windows of the dwelling adjoining the proposed development are orientated to the northwest. With this orientation, the overshadowing from the proposed development has a much greater impact on reducing solar access to the living areas, which cannot be mitigated through the use of a skylight. I note that the developer is claiming that the design complies with the relevant development standards. However, it clearly does not comply with the solar access objectives of the ADG and LEP. The developer goes on to claim that as the adjoining properties are also zoned for high density development, and therefore overshadowing impacts are not considered unreasonable. I feel that this claim is unacceptable for two reasons. One, the redevelopment of the site may take place in the future, possibly in 10 or 20 years. But in the meanwhile, the residents of the adjacent dwellings will be relegated to an existence in the shadow of this building. Two, once solar access is taken away from neighboring dwellings, it will not be possible to restore it. I would like, therefore, to propose that the panel recommends that the development plans be revised to bring them into line with LEP and ADG for solar access in neighbouring dwellings, or more time be given to review the options and come up with a suitable solution. I thank you very much.
So can I just clarify where your dwelling is, your semi?
So number 13 Bondi Road, it's the adjacent one to the development. So the development comprises 7, 9 and 11, and number 13 is adjacent to that.
So do you also have a residential address in Edmund Street?
So we live in Edmund Street. We used to live in 13 Bondi Road.
Right.
So my wife owns that property.
Okay. I understand now.
Thank you.
So that she still owns that property at 13 Bondi Road?
Yes, she does, yes.
Right. And that's one of the properties referred to in the third paragraph of page 315.
Correct. So there are a pair of semi-detached, number 13 and number 15.
Right.
So that's what they are referring to in paragraph 3.
Can I just ask, whereabouts is the living room in your semi that you're referring to?
So the if you go along the outside corridor, there are about, it's a third window along.
Third window along from the street?
From the street, yeah. So the first room, there's a bedroom, and then there's a main entrance. There's another another two bedrooms along. There's a bathroom, and then there's a living room.
So is the only outlook from that living room onto the side boundary, or is there an outlook to the rear as well?
Only to the side boundary.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much.
Now there's Ms. Jenny Askin and Mr. Myerson and Mr. Hancock. Who wants to come forward, please? You want to all come forward at the same time?
Yes, please, Mr. Hancock.
Okay.
He's had another
I'm sure you'll decision. You'll represent him as well as yourself. And Jenny Askin, you're a planner representing the applicant, and Mr. Myerson, the architect.
That's correct.
Yes, please. Who's going to start?
I'll start.
Okay.
So,
Mr. Chair and panel, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you this afternoon. Firstly, we welcome the recommendation of the report and we raise no objection to any of the conditions that have been recommended. The matter has actually been the subject of much consultation with council, including a pre-DA meeting, and we appreciate this collaboration and this has resulted in the favourable recommendation before you. The amended proposal before you has addressed the initial concerns, particularly relating to bulk and scale, the amenity of the rear units at ground level, setbacks, communal open space and landscaping. In terms of the ADG, the proposal is compliant for car parking, solar access to the subject development, ventilation and internal amenity. Whilst the proposal does not fully meet the building separation design criteria, it is acceptable in terms of acoustic and visual privacy, and it's also appropriate given the pattern of adjoining development, particularly being that of a rhythm of smaller separations. As raised by the objector, there has been a concern in terms of overshadowing. The proposal will result in overshadowing to the adjoining properties that are to the southeast. I note it's particularly the window that has been discussed in relation to the living area is particularly vulnerable, being at ground level and facing a side boundary. The report identifies that the impact that is caused is that which is anticipated by the controls, and in particular the FSR and the height control. The proposal is fully compliant with the FSR control. Height is generally compliant except for a small portion. There's a breach at the northwestern corner to the front, but this has no additional impact in terms of overshadowing. And beyond that, it's a compliant height. An increase in setbacks would not result in additional solar access, particularly to that living room window. And this can be seen in the views from the sun diagram that was submitted with the amended plans. Basically, we see the proposal as being considerable. It's an appropriate response. Having regard to the zoning of the site, this is an R4 zone. Having regard to the FSR and the height controls, it will also provide much needed affordable housing in accordance with that bonus FSR, and it also provides a suitable mix of apartments, including a suitable mix for the affordable housing component. Beyond that, we're happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you.
We all had a question about the lift arrangements for the people who are going to live in this apartment. One lift for 41 units?
That's correct, there's 41, yes.
And it just seems somewhat inadequate for that number of people and that number of apartments.
It has to be a very high speed, high quality lift. All I can say is that my colleagues would have checked with the lift manufacturers to see that this would be adequate, and I think if you have a higher speed lift that has a less waiting time, it's the same equivalent of having two lifts that are slower, which is what would often happen. But I understand that if the lift is out of action, then it's a big problem, but it's very rare these days with the quality of technology that we have.
There's actually another issue. It's the fact you've got the split level floor plates. So is the intention that you would get into the lift and then go up a metre, stop, people get out, then you go up 2 metres, stop, people get out, go up another metre?
Yeah.
Okay. That doesn't seem ideal. Is there a particular reason why there's not a second lift so that you can basically serve the two floors separately?
It's probably it's probably a result of the split level, in fact, because you need the lift to be two-sided.
But you could put a second lift in, one servicing the upper level, one servicing the lower level,
You could.
Okay, you
could accommodate that, yeah.
You could accommodate it?
Yeah.
Within the plans?
You'd need a little bit of tweaking of the plans, yeah.
A little bit of tweaking of some of the bedrooms, maybe.
Yeah, you could accommodate it in the overall envelope, I would say, yeah. You'd lose about 4 square metres.
Right, okay,
yeah.
That's fine, thank you.
You're right, yeah.
Right. Incidentally, is there any ADG requirement in terms of the number of lifts and... the number of levels of floors and the number of units?
Straight off the top of my head, I think it relates to the number of units that can be serviced on each level.
Do you remember what that is?
Limited to 8 units.
8 units per floor is level. The requirement, yeah.
It's actually a different control.
Right, it's a different type of control, isn't it? But there's no control that says if you have X number of units in a building and X number of floors, you need more than one lift.
No, the only control I'm aware of is that limit.
I think Ms. Morris should know.
Yeah.
Sorry? Okay. Any further questions or any further statements from
you? I mean, just about that, the solar access, just to have a look at the shadow, this views from the sun, that roof still gets solar access, I think, till 11 o'clock, even with this taller building proposed next to it. However, if, I do need to say that the owner of that property was, our clients did approach that owner to acquire that site, and that wasn't accepted, that offer wasn't accepted. But even if you were to add another floor to the existing semi that's to the north of that number 13, it would have a greater impact on the solar access to that roof and to that window. So I think this...
So this is the relationship here at the moment?
Yes.
On the slide. The narrow gap is the relationship between the
houses. Yes. So you could add another floor to that semi without even having a DA, do it under complying development, and it would have a greater impact.
Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
This matter will be considered when we close the public meeting, which is now at 1:39, with thanks to all the speakers and submitters.